Laudato Jesus Christus. Vatican and World News.
In the headlines this Tuesday, the 5th of August, marking 5 years since the Port of Beirut explosion, we hear from a man whose father was one of the 218 people killed. The situation in Gaza continues to deteriorate, with aid agencies warning that what little aid is being let in is simply not enough. And international talks are underway in Geneva this week for a legally binding deal to stop plastic pollution. In the Vatican, I'm Francesca Merlo. On the 4th of August 2020, 2,750 tons of ammonium nitrate exploded in the port of Beirut. The blast, caused, according to later investigations, by a failure to store the chemicals properly, left over 218 people dead. Today, 5 years on, relatives of the victims say that justice has still not been done. And among them is Eli Hasruti, whose father, Hassan, was killed in the blast. He spoke to Vatican Radio about his effort to bring the truth about the explosion to light.
My deepest hope is for the memory of August 4 to transform from tragedy into a milestone of justice and peace, rooted in prayer and in the living hearts that came together, organized, acted, and prayed for true peace in our hearts in Lebanon, in the region, and in the world. When we lose holiness, we lose courage, humanity, and our compass. We cut ourselves off from what strengthens us. Prayer returns us to our essence. It uplifts us, restores our dignity, our courage, and our momentum. Through it, we remain steadfast and unbroken. And today, on the 5th anniversary, the image of justice denied still looms, despite a faint glimmer of hope in the anticipated return of the investigate after years of suspension. But we do not want a mere indictment or accusation that beautifies the scene without touching the core of the crime, one that goes far beyond negligence and mismanagement. Justice is still waiting. As a Lebanese citizen, before being the son of one of the victims, I ask, would the long-awaited indictment be a step toward comprehensive justice for all Lebanese? Or will it be just another appeasement prize in a new chapter of a cardboard state and empty performances, numbing only a people who have chosen to shut their eyes to the truth?
That was Eli Hasruti from Beirut, whose father was killed in the Beirut port blast in 2020. It is also worth mentioning that Mr. Hasruti met with Pope Francis last year. Also marking the fifth anniversary of the Beirut port blast, a leading human rights organization has condemned Lebanese authorities for their inaction that caused the deadly explosion and for failing to deliver an explanation to victims and to their families. Linda Bordoni reports.
Justice delayed is justice denied, said Amnesty International's Lebanon campaigner in a statement marking the fifth anniversary of the Beirut port blast, one of the largest non-nuclear explosions in history. The families of those killed and injured in the explosion on the 4th of August 2020 have waited an intolerable 5 years. They must not be forced to endure another year of impunity, she noted. The blast killed at least 236 people, injured 7,000, and destroyed large parts of the capital. Despite repeated calls for accountability from domestic and international actors, Lebanese authorities have failed to conduct a credible, independent and impartial investigation. The inquiry has reportedly been repeatedly obstructed by political leaders and state officials seeking to shield themselves from responsibility. The investigation, in fact, has faced repeated suspensions due to legal challenges and non-cooperations from high-level officials. A former public prosecutor even managed to freeze the process in 2023. A glimmer of hope was lit in 2025 when a newly appointed interim top prosecutor overturned prior decisions and President Joseph Aoun and Prime Minister Nawaf Salam pledged to support the investigation. However, observers warn that without concrete legal reforms and judicial independence, meaningful justice will remain out of reach. And human rights organizations note that justice for the Beirut explosion, that was the result of state negligence, is a critical test of Lebanon's commitment to human rights and the rule of law. I'm Linda Bordoni.
And staying with Lebanon, but moving on to the conflict that is ravaging the Middle East, Lebanon's cabinet will meet on Tuesday to discuss Hezbollah's arsenal after Washington ramped up pressure on ministers to publicly commit to disarming the Iran-backed group, and amid fears Israel could intensify strikes if they fail to do so. The session, which was scheduled for 3 p.m. at Lebanon's presidential palace, is the first time the cabinet will discuss the fate of Hezbollah's weapons, unimaginable when the group was at the zenith of its power just 2 years ago. Pressure from the U.S. and Hezbollah's domestic rivals for the group to relinquish its arms has spiked following last year's war with Israel, which killed Hezbollah's top leaders and thousands of fighters and destroyed much of its rocket arsenal. Meanwhile, the United Nations is warning of a deepening famine in Gaza, even as Israel begins allowing some goods into the territory through private merchants. Basic food, baby formula, and hygiene supplies are among the approved items, but as Nathan Morley reports, aid agencies say it's not enough to stem the crisis in a region still under siege.
The move comes as the United Nations warns of deepening famine in the Palestinian territory. The coordinator of the Government Activities in the Territories, or COGAT, says the approved items include basic food, baby formula, fruits, vegetables and hygiene supplies. Israel launched its military offensive in Gaza in October 2023 and imposed a full blockade on March the 2nd. Restrictions were partly eased in May, allowing a private company backed by Israel and the United States to open food distribution centers. Aid convoys and airdrops resumed in late July, but United Nations experts say that famine is still unfolding. Meanwhile, in Germany, a senior lawmaker has called for sanctions on Israel if conditions in Gaza do not improve. Saimtir Moller, who's the deputy chair of the Social Democratic Party's parliamentary group, has proposed partial arms export bans and a review of the EU-Israel Association Agreement. He issued a call in a letter to fellow lawmakers after visiting Israel and the Gaza border. Health officials in Gaza said on Monday that the death toll from Israeli strikes since October has now climbed to 60,933. In a separate regional development, a Hezbollah member was killed and four others injured on Monday in an Israeli drone strike in southern Lebanon. The Public Health Emergency Operations Center, which operates from Beirut with the Ministry of Public Health, said that the drone strike on the town of Qaim resulted in the killing of one individual and injuries to four civilians. Since November the 27th, 2024, a ceasefire agreement brokered by the United States and France has been in effect between Hezbollah and Israel, putting an end to the clashes which had erupted in the wake of the war in Gaza. However, despite the agreement, the Israeli army occasionally carries out strikes in Lebanon, claiming they're meant to eliminate threats posed by Hezbollah. For Vatican Radio, this is Nathan Morley reporting.
Elsewhere in India, surging floodwaters and a torrent of mud swept through a village in the northern Himalayan state of Uttarakhand, killing at least four people, while more than 50 others remain missing. Teams from army and disaster response forces had reached the area with workers trying to rescue people trapped under debris and sludge. In Ghana, a conflict based on tribal leadership in the northeastern part of the country has once again flared up following the murders of three young men in late July. As Kelsey Gussie reports, the country's minister of the Upper East region has praised the local Catholic Church's work in aiding displaced people, but also challenged them to use their influence to bring about peace.
Hostilities resumed in late July after three men were killed in an attack by gunmen in Baku, the capital of the Baku Municipal District in Upper East Ghana. Authorities responded by implementing a curfew and placing security officers in the area. Those deaths once again triggered the long-standing conflict over the role of the Mamprusi and Kwasi tribal leaders in the region. Historically, the Mamprusi asserted traditional authority over the Baku area, while the Kwasi advocated for their rights as the majority population. As a result of the ongoing violence, the Catholic Church in the area has been working to provide aid to refugees and continue to advocate for peace in the region. According to the Vatican's Fides News Agency, the minister of the Upper East Region of Ghana praised this work. The Apostolic Nuncio to Ghana, Archbishop Julian Kabore, made a visit to this northeastern part of Ghana ravaged by conflict. This area is also home to hundreds of displaced people from Burkina Faso who have fled violence from Islamist groups. And this, Fides reports, now threatens to spread to this region of Ghana. Urging the local church to use its influence to push for unity, the minister stressed that both parties involved in the conflict are more inclined to listen to the voice of religious leaders than that of politicians. This conflict originated to pre-colonial times and worsened after Ghana gained independence in 1957, as governments one after another capitalized on the influence of the chiefs to advance politically. Archbishop Kabore expressed his gratitude to the Ghanaian government and the people of the Upper East Region for their continued hospitality and assistance to those fleeing the unstable situation in Burkina Faso. In the midst of the ongoing violence in Ghana, he commended the country's unwavering support for welcoming and sheltering refugees in distress. I'm Kelsey Gussie.
And finally, in Geneva, international talks are underway this week for a legally binding deal to stop plastic pollution. According to the UN's Environment Programme, plastic production and waste is due to triple by 2060, and campaigners are taking to the streets in front of UN headquarters to have their say. They include Shellen Saling, the interim chair of the Youth Plastic Action Network, who spoke to UN News about the far-reaching impact of plastic pollution.
Plastic affects everything from climate change to health to fertility to even birth defects. It affects physical disabilities as well as invisible disabilities. People don't realize how much it actually impacts. And, you know, every single day we are impacted by plastic. And without production cuts, it could get significantly worse. We need an as ambitious treaty as possible. But even that, I mean, I think there's still a bigger discussion and more education to have about the waste trade. You know, a lot of people from the global north don't know that their waste is even exported to places where they can barely handle their own waste as it is. I would say it's a challenging process for youth, and we've had an uphill battle, but I definitely think that there's in particular different, especially some groups like the European Union and AOSIS and as well as GRULAC that are very much attentive and made sure the youth voices are heard and the High Ambition Coalition as well.
That was Shellen Saling, the interim chair of the Youth Plastic Action Network, speaking there to UN News. And that brings us to the end of this edition of Vatican and World News. For more on these and other stories, please visit our website at vaticannews.va and check out our Facebook, X and Instagram pages. Many thanks today go to Luca Rossi, our sound engineer in studio. In the Vatican, I'm Francesca Merlo.